I guess the question is there a pervasive magnetic field, or are we seeing variations of localized fields, and what are the compelling reasons for either? And basically the non-thermal filaments. And one thing that we didn't, this is just a small thing, is what are the lengths of these and how do they vary, and is there a difference between length and strength and orientation? And one of the pros and cons of the magnetized wake theory, which I'm hoping we'll get to discuss. Basically, shock molecular hydrogen has been located at the interaction. And of course, now we're getting to the crux of the matter. Is Sagittarius East in front of the cloud, behind Sagittarius A West? And how do we reconcile the radio, the X-ray, the infrared? And then last, one thing I did learn, red is red and blue is blue. And X-ray is giving us a variety of metallicities here. It seems like some people are saying we're getting much higher than solar. Some people were saying we're getting solar. From the cool stars, we have solar metallicity. From the hot gas, we've got more than solar metallicity. Basically, how do we reconcile all of these things together? Is emission law power law or Bremsstrahlung? And XMM Newton, we saw a two plasma model for Sagittarius East. We saw one plasma model for Chandra. And finally, is Sagittarius East in front of Sagittarius West or behind it? So that's sort of a quick review to remind you of all the talks we've had today. So let's turn the lights and open up to discussion. So let's start off with, is Sagittarius West in front of Sagittarius East? Who wants to start?
I think it pretty much has to be in front. I mean, it has to be in front to some degree. It's seen an absorption.
It's seen an absorption at low frequencies. You see a fantastic hole, a shadow of Sagittarius West.
Okay.
It is in front of it, so it just has to be in front of it.
Okay, so it has to be in front of it.
But is it possible for it to be just inside? Would there still be enough stuff behind it to account for the absorption? Is there any emission seen there? That's my question. But then you could have me this idea, and it could be just inside somehow. I don't know.
Didn't Pat Lauer at all argue that it was just inside because there was some emission from the Sagittarius A halo in front of Sagittarius West?
Yeah, we're just looking at that paper right now, and it's that piece of the argument is a little weak, Mark, I would say. But
okay.
As a co-author, I would try.
But where is Sagittarius Star in all of this? I mean, do we have any good information on where Sagittarius Star relates to all this?
We're going to hear more about that from Trivantius Roy. He has some new evidence.
Okay.
In his talk tomorrow.
Okay, so that's a tickler for tomorrow, but okay. could you conclude? That's okay. I mean, but what is the sort of idea? Is it close? Is it far? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, in the Sagittarius A star, what we see is that it would be behind the 7-ampere halo, but we find indications or a good indication that it has to be in front of Sagittarius A West.
Okay, so you see
that we see a 49 centimeter. The Sagittarius A star is not absorbed, whereas Sagittarius A West is already becoming optical.
Okay, so basically we're saying, we're going towards the black plane, we have Sagittarius Star, Sagittarius West, and Sagittarius East.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would make Yoshi's idea of a cloud passing past Sagittarius Star more difficult, right? Go ahead. So now what do you do, Yoshi?
Taking into account also the molecular stuff, does it mean really that Sagittarius A star is in front of everything?
Yeah.
We don't see the, in the OH results that I mentioned earlier, we don't see A star being absorbed by the plus 50 kilometer per second cloud.
Because that's
or the plus 20 kilometer per second cloud. That means it should be in front of the cloud in that case. But we do see it being we do see an OH streamer absorbing it, which goes right in towards Sagittarius A star, but not the molecular belt complex.
If I can add a bit of circumstantial evidence that might support the idea of a supernova shell sweeping past, basically coming from the east and sweeping towards the west. In the paper I'm on with Farhad Yusufzadeh, last year we had some NICMAS observations of molecular hydrogen, and it's a very thin, we're talking about a cutting across maybe 1 or 2 arcseconds cut, but many arcseconds long, maybe an arcminute long, shock-looking feature. We don't know if it's shock because we don't have spectroscopy to get line ratios. But it exactly parallels the edge of Sagittarius East shell. We have in our paper an overlay of 20 centimeter, which is totally non-thermal emission, and it's exactly on top of it. So it's all just morphological arguments, but it looks like the shell is expanding into the molecular cloud there.
You're past Sagittarius Star.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd just like to comment that because of the enormous shear in this region, of course, as Sagittarius A East expands, it becomes sheared substantially. And if in passing by Sagittarius A star, that shear will become enormous, and the supernova remnant will literally wrap around Sagittarius A star, and all the compressed gas that is at the front will be dumped on Sagittarius A star from all sides, effectively, at once. This is an effect that Kevin Uchida pointed out several years ago. So if it has passed by Sagittarius A star, it's actually a potentially a much bigger deal than just passing by and dumping the local material that happens to be at the shell at that place. It wraps around it and dumps a whole column of material.
Just out of curiosity, if we do have the Sagittarius East sweeping by, as he's saying, getting dumped into Sagittarius star, would that have anything to do with some of the outflow that we're seeing? Are the timescales at all? I mean, how long are the timescales if the stuff you're talking about this morning is in fact outflowing from Sagittarius star? Wasn't that what you were arguing, right?
That's right. The timescale of a few hundred years is consistent if you choose your velocity correctly for the bipolar lobe blobs.
Okay. Yeah.
The issue of whether Sagittarius West is in front of Sagittarius star, looking at it not from so much the observational evidence, if Sagittarius West is supposedly ionized by the stars in the central cluster, which are there because of the gravitational potential of the supermassive black hole, then how could you have Sagittarius star outside of Sagittarius West?
That's a good one.
Have those stars in the ionization there in the first place.
Chris?
I don't think that there's any concrete evidence that central cluster is, that the IRIS 16, the hot stars, in fact, are in the same plane in the sky as Sagittarius A star. They coincide in projected distance, but we don't know anything about the line of sight distance. We know that, say, IRIS 7, and supergiant in the vicinity is ionized. Our shell is ionized by this IRIS 16 complex of hot stars, but the connection to that and Sagittarius A star is not so clear. I mean, it's basically a projection effect argument. They're all within one arc. The IRIS 16 cluster and Sagittarius A star are within one arc second of each other. The only things we know are that in the same place as Sagittarius A star are the stars that are seen in proper motion with these very fast orbits going around that are detected by both gets.
No, but actually, we also know that the northern arm and the stream is being, there's been a lot of evidence that those are actually coming down towards Sagittarius.
The proper motion of the western arm, not the western arm, the northern arm showing that it's flowing around and it's modeled.
We also have the northern arm coming down, and we know that's got to be in the same place.
Okay, I forgot about the gas results. The gas results tell you that at least the gas is associated with Sagittarius A star. It still doesn't tell you whether or not the IRIS 16.
Okay, Mark.
Chris, the stars, the velocity dispersion of the stars, including IRS 16, right?
What did Mark say? I missed it.
Yeah, go ahead.
The velocity dispersion of the stars, including IRS 16, rises dramatically toward the black hole. It's clear that they're associated along the line of sight because of the immediate presence of the black hole.
Certainly the radial velocity of...
Radial and proper motion, both.
Well, is that really true of IRS 16, or is that only true of stars in the central arc second? Stars in the central arc second are very clearly associated with Sagittarius A star. You have all these clear orbits.
Don?
Yeah, isn't it true that the sign of the radial velocity changes as it passes Sagittarius star from the hot star? If that's true, is it?
There was a Gensel et al. Paper that said the blue star was rotating.
There are two separate confirmations: the Omar showing that the sign changes as you pass that big star. Doesn't that mean that the star...
Then it must be co-spatial.
So that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, the Sagittarius West is pretty much an ionized gas, right? And this gas is we see also a large fraction of this gas is emitting in the recombination. And this recombination dynamics follow the central potential where is also traced by this stellar motion, right?
Okay. Yeah. I don't actually think we've got a lot of stellar motions along the northern arm, do we?
Yeah. But in general, he's right that as you go in, there's more velocity in the gas.
Right.
That's where the stars are.
Okay, but how does the ionized gas in the northern arms relate to Sagittarius East? Because, I mean, it's all line of sight, right? I mean, it all looks like it's in the same area, but the northern arm comes to basically down through Sagittarius East. Isn't that correct? So how are they...
Well, it really depends upon where Sagittarius... I mean, it goes back to the question of where Sagittarius East is with respect to Sagittarius West. So on Friday, I'll be talking about the dynamics of the ionized gas, but there is this open question about how that's related to the non-thermal gas and whether or not it's it appears from our stuff that the northern arm is influenced primarily by gravity. It's not influenced by non-gravitational effects. When you get into the mini cavity, there's some other effects that are coming on. But I think it's not pushing around significantly the motions of the northern arm gas from Sagittarius.
Okay. Anybody else?
Just to conclude, since we know that just as he said, the northern arm is going in gravitationally and going into Sagittarius star. We also know that northern arm is ionized probably by the stars,
yeah.
And therefore they have to be all coexistent.
Right. And we're saying, and then we're also saying
they're all in front of Sagittarius
East. They're all in front of Sagittarius East.
But they're all co-located.
Okay, so here's another question. We do have an expanding supernova remnant that's going past the northern arm. Would it have disrupted it? Would we expect to see that sort of coherent structure on the time scales we've seen?
And the
supernuclear ring.
That's what I was
speaking
about. If the structure is smaller than the scale of the supernova remnants, shock easily overpass.
Are you saying the shock can go past it?
So, just overpass.
Without disrupting it at all? Yeah,
the ram pressure of the shock wave was much smaller than the pressure of that northern arm. So
okay.
It wasn't significantly going to affect it.
But why does it interact with the other molecular clouds? I mean, there's these molecular clouds which are around Sagittarius, which are significantly impacted. You have shocks going on there. Then you have it passing over Sagittarius West and the CMB, and nothing is happening.
Well, I know. I mentioned the molecular hydrogen, but also there's the OH-1720 Menkert's masers, which are non-stellar in origin and thought to be shocks.
Where?
Kind of around both sides of Sagittarius West.
Can somebody who gave a talk today and has a good picture come up here and find me a good picture while we continue our discussion? Okay, I guess not. What else? Miller.
I'd like to ask the last two speakers to illuminate this issue of the total energy of Sagittarius, because you remember in Tucson, this was a big point that certainly Robert Silk and I were arguing about considerably 4 years ago. His claim was that you needed 4 times 10 to the 52 ergs because of the large density that the supernova has hit. Eager's Gauss had out 20 years ago had claimed that just a conventional supernova around them.
Yes, I have to answer your question. I think it's radio people estimated simply the mass of the dust shell. But the most of mass is contained in the interacting region with 50 kilometer per second region. But also, radio people individually estimate the expansion velocity using the all direction of each shell.
Let's be careful, that's Metzger et al. You're talking about.
That's right.
Metzger concluded it was 10 to the 50
that's
based on the density from the millimeters, right?
I guess it was wrong. It just simply the dust mass multiplied by the fastest velocity, which was estimated from the, the light shell, from the light shell. So the light shell should move very fast at 200
kilometers. But what total energy do you get again?
I think the 4 times 10 to the 52 is derived from Metsugaito, right?
Yeah, they say 4 times 10 to the 52. What's your number?
What's your number?
It's about the order of 10 to the 51. But we have to assume that they are moving, expanding speed in the interacting region with 50 kilometers per second. Blood should be as slow as 10 kiloparsec or 20 kiloparsec.
Okay. Back here.
I think the problem with this Metzger estimate was they moved too much. They wanted to move too much mass.
Yeah.
That's important. So this is just an energetic mass argument. Energetic argument. How to move so much mass? But if you just say that you don't have to move this mass because this mass is just there, like these huge molecular clouds in 50 kilometers per second. So if you don't want to push this anymore, then you can live with the supernova without any problem. Yeah, and they wanted to move practically everything, and that's why they needed so much energy.
But didn't they need to move it because they wanted to explain the size and the surface brightness of the radio emission, especially the size?
I think
they used dust mass, actually. They had their map, which was shown by Dr. Maeda. They had a shell of dust mass, a shell of dust that they saw was actually 1.3 millimeters. It wasn't 2 millimeters. But they estimate the mass from the dust, from the dust column density.
Right, they said this explosion had to evacuate a cavity. So
that's exactly what everyone said. They got the dust mass, and then they got a velocity from Reinhard Genzel, molecular molecules in back and in front of the shell moving at 200 kilometers per second. So that's where you get the fast velocity and the mass. And look, I thought that was a very good job, but certainly there's uncertainties, a lot of uncertainties, and even the conversion from dust mass to total mass, that the process of that conversion has changed a lot since 1989, because Sadrowski did work that showed maybe that's all by a factor of 3, so there certainly are a lot of uncertainties.
Okay. Anybody else? Fulvio.
I was going to say that in the old days when there was this energy argument, there was another important piece of the puzzle which now seems to have gone away, and that was the instantaneous gamma ray brightness or gamma ray luminosity from the source. Because in the old days, we thought that the E for the source was associated with Sagittarius AEs. Look at the spectrum, the gamma ray spectrum, that looks very much like a typical shell emitter from a supernova remnant, except that the flux was about 100 times higher than any of the others. And so the argument was that this was consistent with the overall energy budget in the sense that the instantaneous power producing the gamma rays now is about a factor of 100 times higher. But now that we know that the gamma ray source is probably not associated with Sagittarius AEs, but rather probably with the ARG, then that piece of well, so.
Sorry, how did you know this? How do you know it's not associated?
With
the high resolution data.
What, you get high resolution data now?
Yeah,
or?
High resolution data, and also there are some Chandra observations which seem to indicate there's a connection between the gamma rays and some of the X-rays. There's a spatial coincidence between the two and a suggestion from the continuation of the spectrum. So the hint is that the X-rays are an indicator of where the gamma rays are coming from. Then the gamma rays are more likely coming from the arc.
From the arc. From the arc or what?
Yeah, I had a question. This is a slightly different scale, or different objects along the line of sight, but it was obviously brought up today, the question of the location of a molecular cloud relative to Sag East. And I just had a question, and basically, maybe for you, Mark. So listening, if we have the Sagittarius shell, I think everyone agrees the 20 kilometer per second cloud is in front along the line of sight. And then there's also this, as we heard, this OH absorption that would place the 50 kilometer per second cloud in front along the line of sight as well. And so if we had that, I know during your talk you claimed that to the south, you were missing the X-rays because of the 20 kilometer per second cloud. And I'm wondering why you aren't missing the X-rays due to the 50 kilometer per second cloud.
Well, if the 50 kilometer per second cloud is abuts Sagittarius A east, That's outside the domain of these bipolar lobes, and are probably likely to be largely behind.
So you want the 50 kilometer per second cloud behind?
Well, it's behind Sagittarius A West, or Sagittarius A star, which I imagine to be the source of polar outflow.
Now I'm completely lost. Is it now in front or behind?
Yeah, you lost me too. 50 kilometers per second cloud is behind Sag A West. Is it also behind Sag A East?
No, it's in front.
So you're saying we've got a large molecular cloud between Sag A West and Sag A East?
It's off to the side.
It's off to the side. It's basically the edge of Sag A East.
Edge of Sag A East, and all of the other action, the bipolar outflow from Sag A West is going south and north.
But as I understood the OH, it has to go in front a little bit, or else you wouldn't get this absorption. I mean, I don't know. That's just what I was hearing, is it has to be in front to some degree.
Back over here?
Okay, well, there's also the possibility, even though that there's indication that the plus 50 is in front of A East, part of it could perhaps be behind A East also, could be wrapping around.
Okay.
Since you have this flowing going into it, so
basically we could just have a supernova running going into the middle of the 50 kilometer second cloud.
Yeah. So
and having
so
we actually could see some absorption from it on
yes,
the front, but
exactly.
Then still have most of it behind. Okay, I'll work with that, yeah.
I was just gonna say that from the distribution of X-ray point sources, it looks like there's a deficit of X-ray point sources both at the 50 kilometer and 20 kilometer second cloud.
So we're probably not seeing anything truly behind these clouds. I mean, these clouds sort of block a lot of our view of things.
I have another problem because I addressed that yesterday already. So I came here in order to learn something, what is along the line of sight, and in the end it turns out that the X-ray astronomers have to help. Because in X-rays, the radiation is absorbed regardless in what state it is. So it could be molecular stuff, it could be gaseous stuff, it could be dust, or so the X-rays don't care. As long as it's not ionized, this makes it indifferent. But what I had been expecting is that if there is a cloud in front and we have the diffuse emission all over the whole region, that I see some shadowing. And so far I didn't succeed. Perhaps I didn't analyze the data to that extent, but I haven't seen any shadowing effects due to clouds in the foreground. What I had been expecting from that.
The 300 megahertz image that was shown yesterday shows this beautiful shadow on Sag A West.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are plenty of shadowing in my image. You see just dark spots, depending on which energy. If you are talking about 6.7 regime, then shadowing is very difficult to see.
Yeah, 6.7.
Yeah, so if you got a lower energy, of course you see a lot of shadows.
Yeah, but are they really associated with molecular clouds that one can decide whether the 50 kilometers per second cloud is in front or behind? That doesn't work.
Yeah,
you see the varying absorption, I agree.
According to Mark, you know, showing this towards the it's a nose, you see the shadow, right?
Right, but I was arguing that there was a strong suggestion of a shadow for the circumnuclear disk.
Yes,
that's why. Yeah. We see that in the data where the infrared, the K-band absorption gives you exactly you. And you take a small model, you integrate this model onto the cloud, you say that the cloud, you suppose that the cloud is optically thick, blocking all the stars behind, and then you can really, what we did, we can really fix where the cloud is, if it is in front or behind. And what we see is essentially a 50 kilometer cloud, that what I can say is slightly in front of such a west, such a star. Okay. Everything is with respect to such a star. And the 20 kilometer cloud is still far in front, and this 50 kilometer cloud. But then the 50 kilometer cloud is clearly in front of such a east, which is behind due to this radio shadow.
Okay. Yeah.
So how big, actually, I suppose people do the molecular astronomy can estimate how big the cloud could be, because you have total column, then the kind of pressure, you know, it cannot be extending forever, right? So from Sag East to the Sag in front of Sag
a star. It has to be very small.
I mean, line of sight.
Yes. So what you can do is to estimate the density as a critical density against tidal sheen. This gives you 10 to the 5. If you put in the column density, this gives you, let's say, a depth of the clouds of several tons. So,
with our remaining 2 minutes, I'd like to get something on another thing. Could we move on to metallicities for just a minute? Yeah, Chris.
Okay, I have an infrared astronomy question for the X-ray astronomers. When you measure an iron abundance, you see these iron lines at 6.4, 6.7 kV. Is that only gas phase, or does that include iron that's trapped in the dust? I mean, are the grains transparent enough to X-rays that you're actually getting a total mass of iron, or only the iron gas phase?
Math is a little bit different. So once we have a hot gas, it's ionized. So we are talking about iron 25, and this, of course, is not a dust. So we see a hot gas, a plasma, and we are fitting that with a model. And due to all the ionization equilibrium states and the number and the abundances and so on, this is a model which tells us that in that plasma we have that element or such an element overabundant or underabundant. The other thing is the 6.4 keV line. This, to my opinion, is of course a dust because this is cold matter. And so this is really solid material. This is what I try to explain, that electrons are hitting a solid target. And it's the old idea, it depends on the depletion in the interstellar medium. But I was always assuming that the cold matter is only in dust, as the metals are only in dust, or mostly in dust. But that doesn't tell us about the abundance.
You don't get the abundance.
No, because I don't know how many electrons we have. Or in the other picture, what the brightness of the source was. You can play in the fluorescent picture. You can play with the brightness of the source or the abundance of the metal, of course. But the hot environment, that really tells us what are the abundances of calcium, sulfur, and so on.
Mark?
This isn't about metallicity.
Okay.
But it's relevant to what Peter said. If we call upon cosmic rays or a high energy particle to account for the 6.4 keV line emission at the surfaces of clouds, we have to wonder where the cosmic rays are in the galactic center. The gamma ray flux from the inner galaxy shows no excess that would have resulted from high energy cosmic rays creating pions that decay in the gamma rays. And if indeed the magnetic field is poloidal, as some of us argue, the resonance time of cosmic rays in this region is very short. The cosmic rays stream or drift right on out on a very short time scale compared to the resonance time in the disk of our galaxy. So one might imagine the cosmic rays are actually rare creatures in this region.
I'm not a cosmic ray expert, but the cosmic rays, or part of the cosmic rays, either low energy electrons, so that's Sergei, answer to your thing, either 10 keV electrons or tens of MeV protons, are discussed as a generator for the galactic rickshaw mission. And this is more or less really diffuse across the whole galactic center region. And interestingly, this can be a chance coincidence. Interestingly, my fit to this cold iron stuff requires the same kind of of particles. So this is either 10 keV electrons, or it can be produced also by MeV protons. I don't know.
Those 10 keV electrons could be the thermal gas also. The only problem is then they would just flow out because the pressure would be so high. Right? So you need to replenish them.
I'm not sure.
Okay,
be a little bit careful in this respect. I'm not sure.
We're starting to run a little over. Let's do two questions in the whole.
I actually just wanted to add to what was just said, that actually when you study thermal conductivity, it turns out that the energy flow is carried by high energy electrons. this energy, you know, 3-5 times the average thermal energy in the gas. So the 10 keV electrons may actually be coming, you know, from the gas, which is 2 to 3 keV. So I think it doesn't have to be really 10 keV thermal gas. So it doesn't. It may still be combined.
I wouldn't ban 10 keV electrons. Yes.
Okay, let's let Chris finish up and then we'll head to lunch. Go ahead.
Okay,
does anyone have a
blank view graph? Yeah. View graph can't have a blank view graph.
Yes, Miller said yes.
Okay, all right. Somebody should go up there. I'm willing to try, but I'll screw it up. Somebody should go up there and do a line of sight where all these variables
tell you what, let's do that over lunch, and we'll come back with our answer after lunch, so if you want to contribute, contribute. First off, I really want to thank all the speakers for a fantastic session.